Can I ask you something? What's your family story worth to you? And I'm not talking about the shiny ones that everybody knows about. I mean the buried ones, the secrets, the heartbreaks, the ones that only slipped out after a night of too much Hennessy. That's what Vietnam Story Bank is for. No polish, no rewrites, no editing, just raw, recorded, beautiful beating history. The kind that makes you sit up and hold your breath. Your father's memories of his mother's wildest dreams, your grandparents' laughter that echoes in your bones. We dig it all up, we record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, untouchable, and unforgettable. Because when your stories disappear, they're gone forever. So go to VietnamStoryBank.com today and make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Eric Ngong is with us today. He is the artistic director of the Viet Film Festival. We had him on last year to give an overview. We have the kickoff of the Viet Film Festival very soon. I hate to say dates on this because sometimes we go back and forth, but it's coming up soon. And welcome to the podcast, Eric.
Well, thank you again for having me back, Kenneth. Good to speak with you this morning.
First of all, let's talk about the overview. What are the dates? Where is it located? So people get an idea.
All right. Well, Viet Film Fest 2025 is going to be the 16th edition of the festival. It will be, so it's a hybrid festival, both online and in person. Online, we will be running from Saturday, October the 4th through Sunday, October the 19th. Just to be a little more specific, we end at 11:59 p.m. Pacific on Sunday, October the 19th. So if you're midstream at that time, it will unfortunately cut off midstream. So just be aware of your timing on that Sunday. In person, we're at the Frida Cinema in Santa Ana on Friday, October 10th, Saturday, October 11th, and Sunday, October 12th, pretty much all day, each day. Saturday, we're going pretty long. I think we're going to be there through almost midnight on Saturday. So those are the dates. Those are the times. We hope that people who are listening and or watching will be able to make it.
And we'll include the link in the description of the podcast. And I'm very excited this year because I'm excited, honestly, every year for Viet Film Festival. For people in the film industry in LA who are Vietnamese, this is a place where we all get together to meet each other. This is a place where we all get together to congregate, to catch up, and to, I mean, honestly, let's face it. This is a place where we meet to get jobs, you know, for somebody like me and other people. We get in and say hellos, but this is the seed of our film community, and we get to share it with the public as well. And it's a very exciting year. In particular, obviously, like you said, Saturday night is going to be a big night for a movie that my dear friend Bao Nguyen, The Stringer, is playing. And that's a real big controversial film. And it's, showing, I think, on two screens now, right?
Yeah, I think it's the only, it is the only film this year that will have the honor of playing in both theaters of the Frida. The Frida is a two-screen theater.
Yeah, exciting. So what's the overall theme and vision for the film festival this year? And how do you all come up with the theme?
So regarding a theme, that's a little difficult to do because you would need to have some sort of overarching narrative or aesthetic through line that would justify it. So I think VIF has kind of departed from that since I took over as artistic director in 2021. But at the same time, regarding like short film sets, we still theme them according to, again, as I said, narrative and aesthetic commonalities. I think some smaller themes that we have noticed this year that, again, don't pervade the entirety of the festival are notable. I've got two things in mind in particular. Last year, I think I may have briefly mentioned that we have been seeing, since I have been in this position, a gradual decline in movies that have directly or obliquely commented about the Vietnam War. I think that's maybe generational. That's a generational shift. Director Tien Do speculated that it's quote unquote battle fatigue, so to speak. This year we saw a spike. And maybe we should have been expecting this because, as I'm sure many listeners have heard multiple times on this podcast over the last year, this is an important year for the Vietnamese diasporic community. This is the 50th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. So maybe we should have expected this. So we have a few more stories again that comment directly on the war or wartime. The Stringer obviously is one of those. I think very interestingly, and we probably won't say this way too out loud, one of the narrative short films that we have this year is a Belgian Vietnamese co-production. It's called Goodbye My Dove. It's showing in the short film set entitled Where the Heart Settles. It's actually a Northern Vietnamese narrative centered on two children as they try to work their way back to find their mother, who is, I'm assuming it's Hanoi, but it's some big city in Northern Vietnam, because they miss her. It's kind of like a Lion in the Witch the Wardrobe situation where the mother sent the children to the rural, to the rural countryside in hopes that they'd be spared from the bombs. So there's that. I think the second small theme we've noticed this year is that we've had a spike as well in animated shorts. Now, Viet Film Fest in the past probably got one, maybe two animated short films in and submitted every year or so. And for a festival of our size, that is to be expected. Last year had a record for. This year, we broke that record again, shattered it really. We had 10 acceptances, and 7 of those are going to be playing together in a short film set called Drawn to the Screen. It's going to be 6 of them if you watch online, just to allow audiences to look at the contrasting styles and approaches of what Vietnamese individuals working in animation, how differently they're approaching their work. So I think that's something audiences can look forward to as well.
That's very exciting. Makes me think about, and I'm going to make a quick tangent here, about the sort of prolification of AI and Sora 2 now. Are you guys getting a lot of submissions for AI animated films?
So I would not say I have the most trained eye when it comes to looking at AI generated works, but from what I've seen from all of our submissions, I just don't detect that at all. These are lovingly created CG animation or hand-drawn animation. I don't detect the use of AI in any of them. A good number of them are student films. There are a few independent works of American animation in there as well. And then WeHo, I have one major Vietnamese studio who sent us a proof of concept for a film that they hope to expand into a feature further down the road. And then I think the last one playing in Drawn to the Screen in person is The Tale of Chan Tan Zung. It's an wildly experimental work. It was the first Vietnamese animated short film to play at the Annecy International Film Festival. For those who do not know what Annecy is essentially the Cannes of animation. It's in this alpine resort town in France, and there is no more prestigious all-animated film festival than that. And I think The Tale of Chan Tan Zung, which is directed by Hachul Le Do. Hachul became the first director of Vietnamese descent to have a film shown at Annecy in 3 decades. So, and only the second ever.
That's a huge feat. That's amazing. Very proud of our Vietnamese artists there. I just want to correct a word that I just said earlier. I said prolification. It's 7 a.m. in the morning. I meant proliferation. So I just wanted to correct myself for all of you listening. It's brutal sometimes to go this early, but here we are. Yeah, I am thinking so much about AI these days and how festivals like yours are perhaps handling and thinking about the future of filmmakers that are using entire AI tools to make films. Have you guys talked about this by any chance?
I think there's been some minor talk about it, but I think I know that technology is evolving quickly, but where we are, October 2025, I don't think AI is that sophisticated enough yet to completely, how do I say this, mimic human authorship of a short film, let alone a feature. I think it would be detectable very quickly. But I do not believe we had even a submission that even touched upon it, perhaps lightly, because I know that there are some feature films over the last year that have had that have used AI for voice correction, for visual, adjustments. I'm thinking of last year, Brady Corbett's, the title escapes me right now, but The Brutalist, So I think what he did there was that he used AI to help correct Adrian Brody's Hungarian speech, which, again, it's very difficult to speak Hungarian, and Adrian Brody's not a native Hungarian speaker, and he had to correct some of the vocal inflections there, and that was undetectable to almost everybody. So maybe that's going on, but as for full implementation across the film, to fully write a screenplay using AI, I don't think we've seen that yet. But we have talked about it, but not to a great extent at this point. I think it is something we do need to go over, however.
Yeah, it's coming. But yeah, you're right. It's not there yet. But I think in another year or two, the technology will be, you're really prompting. So there's some artistry there, right? Because you still have to author a story, and you're just using tools that are, you know, AI tools to get to the point of what you're trying to say. But how many films this year are being showcased, and what are you excited about? What is Eric excited about?
Okay. Well, there are 59 films that are going to be shown at the festival this year. That's 47 short films and 12 features. So again, we have a split virtual and in-person element. There's no way to watch every single film if you're attending in person, because we have overlapping times. And there are some virtual exclusive films in addition to in-person exclusive films. As for things I'm most excited about, I've already talked to you about Drawn to the Screen, but I will say that when I took over this position as artistic director, one of the things I said in my job interview to get this position was that I did want to expand the presence of animation at this festival. And I'm glad that gradually that has occurred. So, of course, I'm looking forward to that. I am also looking forward to, I think our mid-afternoon slots on Saturday, probably most of all. And I'm so sorry that the films are competing against each other, but there was some scheduling quirks that we had to navigate, and this is what happened. I'm going to begin in Theater One on mid-afternoon on Saturday. And that's the combination of a short film called On Healing Lambert's Perch and a feature film, Year of the Cat. Ken, have you heard of either of those?
I actually have. I know both the directors. And I heard both. I've watched Year of the Cat by Tony, and I loved it. I think everybody should go see that film. It's fascinating. Well done. And On Healing Land, I know Naja, and I haven't had a chance to watch yet. And I'm going to do my best to come down and see it and support Naja.
Very briefly for listeners out there, On Healing Land, Bird's Perch, the preceding short film, is about the surviving family members whose lives were most impacted by a photo known as Saigon Execution. This is a Pulitzer Prize winning photo from the Vietnam War. I do warn you, if you have never seen it, if you look it up, it is the moment just before something truly horrible. So it takes the point of view of the surviving family members, again, of the subjects of that photo, and one other subject whose family was also impacted by that photo. And it cross-stitches how their lives have been impacted from the moment depicted in Saigon Execution, and how either harassment, bullying, the grief over their missing loved ones or survivor's guilt has racked their lives ever since. And I think it's a beautiful directorial debut from Nasha. So On Healing Land, Bird's Perch will precede Year of the Cat. I think On Healing Land is already qualified for the Academy Award for Best Documentary Short Film, having won an award at Cleveland. And Cleveland is an Academy-recognized short film festival. The following feature is Year of the Cat, directed by Tony Nguyen. Tony has not been to our festival in a while, but we're glad to have him back. So Tony lost all contact with his father after the fall of Saigon. And this is his extremely raw and personal documentary in which we find him attempting to learn more about his father, his potential whereabouts, and him hoping to reconnect with him and other family members in Vietnam. We paired both of those together because of, I think, just both are war stories, obviously, or war adjacent stories, and the emotional rawness of both. It will be a very emotionally moving screening, we think, for, I think, the one and a half generation and the first generation. So I think I that's one of my favorite pairings of the festival right there. I'm going to move into the other theater. Theater 2, playing at the same time, is a short film called War Okay and a Czech film called Summer School 2001. War Okay comes from Lucia Tran. She's a Bay Area based director. Essentially, it is about a dysfunctional family in which all the small kids swear like sailors. It's a comedic short film about a dysfunctional family that goes into a dramatic feature film about a dysfunctional family. Summer School 2001, again, comes from the Czech Republic. It's directed by Dušan Zun. And this is Dušan's directorial debut. It's also special because it's the first Czech feature film involving Vietnamese protagonists at its very center. We've had a number of short films from the Czech Republic before come our way to the festival, but those are short films. And the Czechs have a proud, proud, proud film history. I'd put them up there with, and I know most won't, I put them up there with the France, the Germanys, the Italys of the movie world. But anyways, it's about this family, a father, a mother, older brother, younger brother, and it employs a structure in which we see the we see certain events through the perspectives of the father, the older brother, and the younger brother. It's very Rashomon-like for those of you who know what I'm referring to. I should also note that things go in motion when the older brother, who has spent the last 10 years of his life in Vietnam caring for his grandmother, returns home to the Czech Republic, hoping for a welcoming family reunion, but all he finds is familial strife, and a younger brother who barely knows him, very jealous about all the attention that his older brother is getting. I think for a lot of young men in particular, who are about my age, they will notice a lot of period details that say, hey, I was about that old in the early 2000s, and I kind of remember how life was like then. And in general, I think Summer School 2001 is a question, what is it like to be a man when you're straddling between two worlds? And what does masculinity look like when you are in that very vulnerable age of your late teenage years and just before you become a tween? So I think for some of us who are, again, millennials like myself, I think we'll find a lot of commonalities with the characters in that film, at least the kids.
You know, you brought up the picture in Healing Land by Nasha. I'm just truncating these titles just for the sake of conversation. And there's a Pulitzer photo at the center of The Stringer by Bao Nguyen, also playing this year. They're two different takes on these photos, but at the center is these Pulitzer photos that are being showcased in the film. It's very interesting that these two are being shown this year, and how much these films are touching the Vietnam War this year. And it's, I think we are moving away from it, but in Vietnam, there has been a string of feature films that are showing details of the Vietnam War from the side of the, obviously, for the Vietnamese government. It is a huge year, but not as big as I thought it would be, to be honest with you, Eric.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to recognize that Vietnam has submitted Red Rain as their international feature submission to the Academy Awards this year. For those who don't know, Red Rain is, I think, now the highest grossing Vietnamese feature of all time. It deals, I believe, with, it's part of the Battle of Hue, I believe, correct? Quang Tri Citadel. And it is, of course, mostly from the point of view from the North. So they have their big film over in Vietnam that was released very recently. So obviously they have not submitted to Viet Film Fest. I think it would stir controversy if we did show it. But at the same time, I do kind of wish that they submit, because I do want to see it and see it for myself. Eric, I'm one of those people.
And I think it's fair, right? I want to watch it too, because we are, you know, this is our world. But what would be, I mean, Viet Film Festival's stance on this? Would you accept it into the festival?
That is a great question that I cannot fully answer. I've already told you that we accepted the Northern narrative earlier in this interview. That was Goodbye, My Dove from Felix Wong Bak. Again, he's a Belgian Vietnamese filmmaker. And I also wanted to note that Goodbye, My Dove does not even touch upon politics. It is simply a story of survival between young older brother and little sister. It's very Grave of the Fireflies like, for those who know their animation. Very little politics involved, but obviously Red Rain would be heavily politically charged. To be quite honest, I don't know, because we have not accepted a film with such obvious and blatant politics before. I'm speaking without having seen the film, for those who don't, for those who are wondering. But we would be open to it being submitted. Would it be accepted? I can't comment on that. It would have to come down to film quality and whether or not we could respectfully show it to the community or not. That is an open question. I do encourage them to submit, though.
Yeah, and I think it's a very interesting question, a fair question if you think about it. We should be able to be discussing this right now. I mean, that's, you know, I think a step forward to recognizing perspectives from the other side, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I know that your team is very open-minded, but at the same time, we also have to be very careful about the feelings of people who've lost a lot in their lives as a result of, you know, this war called the Vietnam War. And it is something that is still hurting human beings that are living amongst us, you know, our parents, our grandparents. They're still living in this pain. And I think that how do we approach a movie being brought in from literally the other side, the other side of who they fought?
Yeah. That again is an open question that if that reality came to be, we would have to discuss it as a team. I know that there have been, for whatever reason, there have been some propagandistic Chinese films that have made it to Orange County cinemas. There was a movie a few years ago. This is not the correct title, but it's a Chinese film. It depicts the Battle of Chosin Lake. For those who do not know, the Battle of Chosin Lake was a very important battle during the Korean War, which the film glamorizes the Chinese Red Army and the North Korean Army. And that somehow got distribution here in America. So regarding Red Rain, that is a we'll see. But I think I wanted to bring this back because I think your original question was regarding The Stringer and its connection to On Healing Land and how there have been fewer movies regarding the Vietnam War than you thought there would be. I think the obvious idea would have been to pair On Healing Land and The Stringer together. We were considering that. At the end of the day, the programming team and I, which include a fellow from UC Irvine and an intern from New York University, we decided that that was too emotionally heavy. And that both films, because of their similar subject content, needed to be separated. So it was a consideration, but in the end, we didn't go for it. Regarding The Stringer, its approach to its topic is obviously less about the trauma of the moment and regarding the authorship of the photo itself. For those of you who have not read about it, it questions whether or not AP photojournalist Nick Ut took the photo known as The Terror of War, more commonly known as Napalm Girl. I don't see the film as a tirade against Nick. I don't see it as an invective against the AP. I see it as an examination of journalistic ethics. And I think it is very critical of the AP, but it doesn't do so in a way that is reckless, emotionally charged, or resulting in any ad hominem attacks. I know that it's making its West Coast premiere at us, and I know that its selection is controversial. I think there are some other festivals, other regional festivals that cater to Asian American cinema that decided to avoid this film. That is my understanding, but we decided that Bao's perspective is valuable. We do not, at Vala and Viet Film Fest, we do not necessarily endorse the findings of the film or the stance that it takes. What we do endorse, though, is Bao's artistry and the fact that he is able to craft a film that spotlights a perspective regarding this photo that very few people outside of journalistic circles have heard of. And that is why we are showing it. No more than that. Again, we are not endorsing the film's position. We're just endorsing Bao's artistry at the end of the day.
I love what you just said. I couldn't have said it any better. I really think that if I could put that same message out there to anybody who's considering watching The Stringer this year, you have to listen to it. Eric just said it's please audience. You know, and I say this because, I have, you know, I've been friends with Nick for a few years and, you know, I'm Facebook friends. And when, this came out to challenge his authorship, you know, there's so many people in the AP world that, are his friends that rushed out to defend him, which I understand. I get that emotional side. But like you said, I think it's the artistry that Bao Nguyen brings to the table where he really kind of, you know, surgically helps us see what this is about. And it's just not, it's not an attack. You're right. There's no personal attacks. There's nothing vicious about it. It's really just a surgical approach to saying, hey, maybe we should examine this. And I think this is important because the Vietnamese people are not a monolith. There are things that have happened in our history that happened really. It was a good thing that Nick Ut won that. But at the other side of this, there's another photographer who's Vietnamese who didn't get the credit. So perhaps we should review the tape. We should look at what was done. And I think that all the people that are in support of Nick, just rushing in to have that 100%, I got your back, Nick, you shot it, you did it. I think the film really helps to kind of like move that around a little bit.
I also wanted to comment on Nick very briefly. I think some of his defenders as well have cited his work, his humanitarian work. I don't think that's blighted by this film. Whether or not he took the photo, I think what Nick has done as a humanitarian, as an advocate for peace, regardless of his authorship or not, will always be commendable. I have no doubt in my mind about that. So I just wanted to put that out there.
That's a great point.
This is not.
Whether you shot it or not, you did great in the world and you use that as a platform to promote peace. And I think that's a really wonderful point that you bring out. But I hope that everybody goes out to see The Stringer because it's, you know, one of the most important films of this year. Mm-hmm. That was a
hand. I know we're expecting a very turbulent Q&A that evening, emotionally, perhaps from folks who may be a little less open-minded as well. We are preparing for that. I hope it is a vigorous Q&A. I hope that I don't believe Bao's film to be the most perfect thing in the world. I think it is, of course, open to criticism, and I hope that people do bring up criticisms at the Q&A if they have got them. So we're inviting everyone who's got an open mind to come, please see
it. You know, Eric, I wanted to ask you logistics about the Q&A, because there's two theaters. Like, how does that work for audience who want to catch the Q&A?
So we're doing something novel this year regarding the Q&A. We're actually going to ask people in Theater 2 to stay put, because the Q&A is going to be live streamed from Theater 1. There will be about a 1 second audio delay, but we'll project the events of Theater 1 onto Theater 2. And we will alternate audience questions between both theaters. So it's not as nice as being right there live in person in the flesh, but that is something that we are going to be employing this year for this Q&A alone.
That is fantastic. What an awesome thing. Because normally people from Theater 2 would probably go over to Theater 1 and you would lose a lot of people. But this year, having that system, I think it's a genius. It's a wonderful setup.
Well, I wanted to thank my executive team for letting me know that the previous solution was a bit of a fire hazard. And the Frida Cinema was not necessarily very happy with folks in the aisles for a previous Q&A. So thank you for pushing me on that one.
What other films should we know about? What other details, before we wrap up here, should we know about, would you like to talk about?
I think I wanted to point folks to From Saigon to Dien Bien Phu, which is at the end of Sunday, directed by Lai Mong Hoang. It is from 1967. It is from South Vietnam. And that probably will perk up a few ears, I imagine, among the audience. Not a lot of South Vietnamese cinema gets shown in any forum. And From Saigon to Dien Bien Phu, which stars Kyo Chin, by the way, it is making its partial restoration premiere with us. Oh, so what I mean by partial restoration is that it's missing minutes. It is not missing any minutes. It is just that the UCLA Film and Television Archive has enlivened its Eastman color graphics and has put together a print whose video quality is the best we have seen in decades. It's not the restoration, though, is not quite done. It could still look better. It could still sound better. So this is being framed as a fundraiser to help restore the films of Mi Van Studios. From Saigon to Dien Bien Phu is part of a 10-film collection at the UCLA Film and Television Archive from Mi Van Studios. And it was the grandson of the founders of the studio who donated those films. Those 10 South Vietnamese films are among the last relics of a cinematic tradition that I do not think has much left. I don't think many South Vietnamese films survive. Even if they did, out in Vietnam, Vietnam does not have the infrastructure to restore them. The likes of UCLA and some of the film archives in America do. And so that screening will be, again, a fundraiser for that. I also do need to note that for those who are going into that screening, there are some other interesting aspects about it. We are showing the film with its original subtitles. So for a lot of younger cinephiles like me, we have seen films, non-English language films with subtitles that are digitized. Those of you who watched Criterion Collection works, those of you who saw, you know, the likes of Korean, Japanese, and French masters in movie theaters over the last few years, you're looking at digitized subtitles. Have you ever seen burned-in subtitles, burned onto the print itself? That's a wholly different thing. When you see From Saigon to Dien Bien Phu are traditional Chinese subtitles and English subtitles just below that, literally burned into the print with all of the misspellings involved. There's a lot of misspellings. And so I think it adds to the charm of the screening that were actually seeing that. And I had never seen a burned in subtitle before I saw from Saigon to Yen Bian Phu. So I was so glad to see that. I think one other thing as well that audiences will note is that the actors are speaking, but the audio will sound off. And what is going on? Is it UCLA's fault? What's going on? Well, again, I invoke classic cinema once more. For those of you who have seen the likes of the films of Vittorio De Sica, Federico Fellini, Michelangelo Antonioni, these Italian greats post-war, I think a lot of you know that when you look at Italian films post-war, there was a lack of audio technology post-war. So what they did was that they shot the films, but then the actors all dubbed their own lines after the shoot in post-production. So when you see the dialogue, it's a little off, and you'll notice the slight inaccuracies of, you know, the mouths moving and the audio that you hear. And for whatever reason, the Italians, even after the post-war scarcity ended, they kept doing that through until the 60s, even the 70s. That is the same deal from Saigon to Dien Bien Phu. So it's not a shortcoming. It's just built into it's a part of the feature. And you'll also notice that some of these actors are of Chinese descent, and Vietnamese is coming out of their mouths. So yeah, it's very Hong Kong Kung Fu cinema in that sense. But I think it is also following a lot of the norms that you saw from international cinema at the time. And for me personally, that post-war Italian cinema where dubbing was just post-dubbing was just the thing that persisted decades after, even after they got the technology to record right then and there.
So interesting. I understand that there is a gala on October 12th at the end of the whole film festival to wrap everything up. Is that open to the public?
It is, but I think it's a very steep ticket price. I'd have to look at the price, but essentially that is our awards ceremony in which we will be presenting best feature, best short, best actor, best actress, a spotlight award, which we give to a film that, well, either a promising first-time filmmaker and or a film that highlights a very important issue to the Vietnamese community, but is usually an issue that has been underreported or undercovered. So it's either one or both of those. That's the Spotlight Award. That's an honorary award, not competitive. And for the first time ever, as a competitive award, we're introducing Best Cinematography. When I thought about expanding the awards that we give, I thought about, well, what is the most essential part of movie making? And that boiled down to me for two possible categories. It was either going to be cinematography or it was going to be editing, because you can't have this medium without either. And at the end of the day, we're a visual storytelling medium. So Best Cinematography is our new competitive category this year. I believe it was given out as an honorary award back in the day to, I don't remember who the cinematographer is, but it went to Victor Vu's Bloodletter and its cinematography back in the early 2010s. So this is the first time this is going to be a competitive category from here on out. So yeah, that's our award ceremony. The public's invited to attend. Tickets are, I know they're on the more expensive side, but it is a good party. There's a lot of good food, and we also have a silent auction for those of you auction buffs who are interested in winning something.
We have a live auction as well, which I'm running for the evening. It'll be a fun night. So I encourage everybody who can partake to buy tickets. It'll be a fun night, which is October 12th. Eric, thank you so much for taking the time out to come on to the Vietnamese podcast. I really appreciate you. And your presence and your film knowledge is always so on game. What do the young kids say? That's on fleek. I think that it is.
Well, I had to think about the Brutalist for 5 seconds. But other than that, I think I got everything down.
You did. So. You nailed everything. And I hope to see you very soon. It'll be this week. There's a lot of festivities, so I'll be seeing you, Eric. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.